वाणी गुणान कथने श्रवणौ कथायां हस्तौ च कर्मस मनस्तव पादयोर्नः स्मृत्यां शिरस्तव निवास जगत् प्रणामे दृष्टिस्सतां दर्शनेस्तु भवत्तनूनाम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति. I pray that all our speech be devoted to the narration of thy infinite glories, O Lord. Our ears be devoted to the hearing of thy wonderful glory. May our hands be engaged in performing thy work. Our minds be dedicated to meditation on your holy feet. And may our heads bow down to the whole world, which is thy abode, and our eyes always engaged in seeing your glorious presence in all the forms. Om peace. Peace be within us all. Peace and harmony be amongst all beings. And peace be everywhere in nature. Good morning, all of you. Now we are approaching the end of Sri Rama's instructions to Shabari on how to cultivate pure devotion. As you already know, Sri Rama mentioned 9 different things, beginning with holy company, spiritual talk, devotional singing, etc. And we are at the end of the last but one, 8th instruction, which is tranquility and other virtues, purity of the mind, calmness and purity of the mind. Shamadhi sahitam tatha. The previous topic, one before that, was non-attachment to sense objects. And this is a continuation of that. They are quite related. If you are deeply attached to sense objects, then there is no calmness in the mind. Mind is always disturbed. So we will see what is meant by shama and how we can practice that discipline. These forms, shama forms, the first of the 6 disciplines that Shankaracharya has mentioned in his celebrated work, Viveka Chudamani, where he describes the 4 steps, fourfold preparation for self-inquiry, to prepare the mind to fruitfully engage in self-inquiry, the nature of ourself, atma-vichara. We have to prepare the mind. An unprepared mind cannot reflect on deeper and sublime topics, such as the nature of the self, etc. So he says, there he calls them collectively sadhana chatushtayam. Chatushtayam means a group of 4 disciplines, spiritual practices. Sadhana chatushtayam, 4 spiritual disciplines to prepare the mind. Similar instructions have been given by other teachers. Patanjali, in his Yoga Aphorisms, has mentioned about Yama and Niyama, the first 2 of the 8 step yoga that he describes. But the foundation for all spiritual paths, whether we follow the path of meditation of Patanjali or the path of devotion as described by Narada, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Ramakrishna and other Prahlada and other great teachers of devotion, or we follow the path of inquiry into the nature of the self, which is called Vichara Marga or Jnana Marga, spoken of eloquently by Swami Vivekananda and Ramana Maharshi and other great teachers. We need the foundation. Foundation is the same. The superstructure can be variations. There can be variations in the superstructure, but the foundation has to be strong and firm and durable. Then anything built on such a foundation will stay. If the foundation is weak, then no matter how beautiful the superstructure is, it will not be fruitful. It will not be successful. So we have to pay special attention to the preparation of the mind and the body also, mind, body all together. And towards this end, Sri Ramachandra Swami has given many of these 8, 9 disciplines. One of them, the first one of this Shama, he did not list the whole, all the 6 disciplines individually. As is customary in Vedanta scriptures, they mention one and the whole class is intended. A part represents the whole. When they speak of sense organs, they say chakshu, shrotram chakshu. There are 5 sense organs of perception. Rarely you see all the 5 of them listed. They mention 1 or 2. And then the implication, we have to infer the others also, whole class is meant. But instead of listing all members of the class, 1 typical or 2 typical members are listed and everything is to be inferred, concluded. Shama adi saitam tatha, Ramachandra Swami. Shama adi means etc. Beginning with Shama, other disciplines, there are 6 of those. These we have studied before in various contexts, but you will again look at them in the context of Sri Rama's teachings to Shabari on how to cultivate pure devotion to God. Shama means, the word Shama itself means peace, tranquility, absence of conflict and disturbing waves in the mind. In the Vivek Chodamani, Shankaracharya defines Shama in this way. I'll recite the verse and I'll give the translation and explanation in following that. Virajya Vishaya Varatat Dosha Drishtya Muhur Muhu Sulakshye Nyata Avastha Manasa Shama Ucchate. Tranquility of the mind. Absence of disturbing waves in the mind, including thoughts in the mind. Such peace comes when we withdraw the mind and sense organs from the sense objects and make them dwell on the self within. Vishyavratad, all the sense objects taken together. All sense objects means everything that can be seen, heard, touched, smell, and taste is a sense object. And we have 5 sense organs of perception. And we have 10 sense organs of, 5 more sense organs of action. Karmendriyas, Jnanendriyas. These 5 or 10 sense organs, by their very nature, they are made in such a way, it seems, by the Creator. It seems that these sense organs have a natural tendency to always go out and seek contact with sense objects, hoping that such contact will bring happiness. That's the all play of the mind. All this happens in the mind. Sri Krishna explains the psychology of desire and fulfillment, desire and consequences, nicely in the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter and in the second chapter, notably, other places too. He says, the 5 sense organs, especially the 5 sense organs of perception, eyes, nose, ears, sense of touch, etc., they are always hankering for contact with sense objects, corresponding sense objects, hoping that such contact will bring happiness. Though we know and we have to understand that that's not the best way to find happiness. That is the theme of this instruction. In the Kathopanishad, Yama says to Nachiketa, it seems that they were created, the sense organs were created that way, with that natural tendency. We always are looking outside. What other people are doing, what's happening anywhere in the world, what's happening in the field of so many fields of human endeavor, politics, sports, fashion, design, comfort, sense objects, food, etc., etc., that we become familiar with sense objects outside world very much. We know what is happening far away in different globes, in the different corners of the globe. We also know what is happening in the galaxies and the stars. We can get on the computer screen, we can get pictures, magnified pictures of distant stars and galaxies and planets, thanks to internet and technology. They are good. But when we are so well informed about these far away or nearby sense objects, we are woefully ignorant of our own self. That is why we fail to see the self. Yama says to Nachiketa, tasmat parang pashyati. A person sees all outside objects very vividly. He remembers all the trivia, everything. But ask anyone about your true nature, then we draw a blank, it seems. Most of us, most of the time, anyhow. There are people who know, who have knowledge of the self. So we are ignorant of ourselves because the mind is full of disturbances caused by contact with sense objects outside. So the first thing we have to do is to study the limitations of this kind of happiness that is experienced when the sense organ contact sense objects. You have to see the negative implications of sensory pleasure in plain words. Dosha drishti means studying carefully, objectively, the disadvantages, drawbacks in trying to find happiness outside the world. Vedantic scriptures and teachers have been saying that the source of happiness is inside, not outside in the world. But you are looking for it in a place where it has no chance of being found. All our life is spent in seeking happiness in worldly endeavors, possessions and property and fame and fulfillment of sensory desires and power and wealth and all these things we acquire, we do, hoping that they bring happiness. But in the end, what happens? Sri Krishna says vividly in the Gita, this is going to result in utter disillusionment, not fulfillment. For a time they promise, you do experience happiness, we do. But then you become dependent on them. Once you become dependent on them, then we are hooked. If once sooner or later, the problem is, sooner or later there is going to be separation. There is going to be separation. They are not permanent. They are temporary. Nachiketa says, when Yama offered to Nachiketa all kinds of worldly sources of enjoyment, wealth and kingdom and long life and music and dance and chariots and horses and everything, Nachiketa flatly refuses them, firmly. He had the wisdom. Though he was a young boy, he had the wisdom to say no firmly to all those offerings. He says, these things are not going to give me lasting happiness. First of all, indulgence in sense pleasures depletes the energy and acuity of the sense organs. Sarveindriyanam jarayanti tejaha Nachiketa says. How much food can we eat? How many clothes can we wear? How many jewelry can we wear? How many movies can we see? How much travel can we do? How much money can we accumulate? They're all good for some time. But they are not permanent sources of happiness. That we find out, that we discover, usually somewhat late. By the time we discover the impermanence and non-dependability of the sense objects as sources of continued happiness, it's already we have spent a lot of time. So, Sri Ramachandra Swami says, dosha drishti. This is a very important discipline we have to practice. Dosha drishti means frequently, muhurmuhu dosha drishtya. Frequently we have to dwell on the disadvantages and negative aspects of finding happiness in the outside world. But we have to find happiness. Vedanta says we have to find happiness. You have to be happy. Why be morose, unhappy? But happiness has to be long-lasting, permanent, eternal, unconditional, and infinite. You should not be satisfied with a little mere experience of a five-minute pleasure or 2 seconds in the limelight and 5 minutes on the throne. And then what happens? dukkhayo naya evati. Eventually, separation will come, has to come, is inevitable. And when separation comes, we have become dependent on it and we feel the pain all the more. Therefore, Shankara says, defining shama, vishayavrata dosha drishtya muhurmu. This is how to see dosha drishti, how to find, how this don't adjust. Perfect example of dosha drishti, study of the disadvantages of sensory pleasures will lead us to dispassion, renunciation. Disillusionment, dispassion, renunciation can be seen in the perfect example of dosha drishti, how it can lead us to renunciation and eventually eternal joy, is in the life of Buddha. He does that one. As you know, Buddha's story, he was brought up in a very sheltered environment. Because when the little prince was born, boy was born, his father was a king. He had a kingdom. The astrologers came, as was the practice those days, and drew the birth chart of this newborn infant. And the astrologers told the king that this boy will become world famous. In one of two ways, he'll become the greatest emperor, leads a princely life, joyful life, successful life, enjoys power, fame, position as a big emperor, or he may become the greatest saint, worshipped by spiritual seekers for posterity to come. One of those two. His father, being a king, he didn't want his son to become a monk, renounce the kingdom. Father wanted to his son to become a prince and then take over and become the king of a large empire. Father's aspiration for his son. Nothing wrong in that. Father's parents want their children to succeed. So the father, Suddhodana, brought up this child in a very sheltered, protected environment in the palace. Strict orders were given to the people who were responsible for the upbringing of the royal child that nothing negative should be shown to him. It's protected. Then the boy goes up and he says to his father, I want to go out and see the kingdom. I've always lived only in the palace in this nice surroundings, environment you have provided, but I want to see what's in the kingdom. So the king was not very enthusiastic to send the boy out into the world where you see good and bad mixed inseparably in the world outside. In the palace, you can orchestrate the environment to be always nice and pleasant and fragrant and beautiful, but you can't do that in the world outside. There's a jungle out there, as people say. Lot of suffering is there. Wherever you turn, you see fighting, violence, suffering, bad things, and good things. But the boy wanted to see. So the father arranges in such a way, a procession, a chariot, he was to be taken in a chariot, the boy to be taken in a chariot, by a trained charioteer, was told strictly to avoid all negative scenes. And in the royal path of the procession, everything negative was removed. King gives strict orders, no old people should be there, no poor people should be there in the path where the prince is going to go. No sickness, no poverty, no nothing negative should be shown. Everything has to be clean during the duration of the procession. So the boy is taken out. Dosha drishti, we are trying to understand how examining the negative aspects of worldly pleasures will lead us to dispassion, and then to renunciation. And divert our attention, our search for happiness to the self within, where it can be found. So he sees an old person standing there. Somehow that man came into the royal path, holding supporting himself with a stick. Whole body is emaciated, old, and gray hair or no hair. Everybody else is young and youthful and vibrant. This person stands out in that crowd. The boy asks the charioteer, what is this? Is he a human being? Charioteer, yes, sir. He's an old man, old age. Will I become old also? Yes, sir. Everybody will sooner or later become old. Will I become like this? If you live long enough, sir, you will become, you all become like that. You can't escape old age. So he comes back deeply engrossed. What is this old age? He had never seen it before in the palace. The king had so arranged the environment in the palace that no old people were there around. All young, strong, well-built, beautiful, good-looking people were serving him. Then he becomes thoughtful. What is this old age? I had never heard of it, never seen before. And charioteer says, oh, everybody will become old. I will also become old like that one day. Then after some day, he goes again on another tour. This time, in spite of king's precautions, there was a very sick person, and people are carrying a dead body. Four times he goes out, contains the story. A dead body was being carried out for cremation in procession. The boy saw, see, prince sees that one. What is that? Somebody is being carried by people on their shoulders. Where are they going? What is happening to that? What happened to that person? Charioteer says, sir, he is dead. And what will happen? Dead means what? He has never seen death before. Sheltered environment. So, oh, everybody has to die. Will I die also? Yes, sir. What will happen to the when the person dies? Will be cremated. Burnt. Oh, what is revelation? Shocking revelation to young prince Siddhartha. Then he comes home dejected. Old age, he sees sickness and poverty, disease, old age, everything he sees. And then he cannot enjoy the pleasures of the royal palace any longer. His mind dwells on this negative aspect. Dosha drishti. This is all there is to human life. One day I will become old. And my body will become diseased. Then I will die. Then they will cremate. This is it. That is it. Part of life. Then he becomes very thoughtful. What made him thoughtful was seeing the negative aspects of life. Was there any exaggeration? No. Everybody becomes old. So everybody sooner become or later become sick one day. Everybody dies, everybody will be created or buried. Nothing exaggeration. That is the truth. So he became very thoughtful. This is what in the Mundaka Upanishad we studied. Prikshalokan karmachitanam brahmanaha nirvedamayat. When we frequently and thoughtfully dwell on the negative aspects of life, which you cannot avoid, then we become to question, what is, where is happiness? How can I find? I want happiness. That is the common quest. That is perfectly all right. We have to seek happiness. But this is not true happiness. One day everything will go away from me. My body will become old, diseased, and die. Then what happens? Lot of suffering in between. In the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, Janma Mrityu Janavyati Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. Everything in this human life is full of suffering, but we choose not to see that or not to notice it. But we try to see the good things in it. Even though it is good, but in the long run, we should not spend all our life thinking life will be good one day. If I do this, I'll become happier. If I do that, I'll become happier. If I get that, I'll be happier. Those don't work forever. For some time, they may work. So we have to look for sources of happiness, a source of happiness, which is intrinsic. All happiness coming from outside is undependable, notoriously undependable. They are here today, next moment they are drawn away, taken away from us. Or either all of them are there intact and I have to leave the scene, or I am intact and everything will leave me. One or the two, one way or the other, separation will come. They are not dependent as sources of happiness. So I have to find such a source of happiness which will always be there, which is intrinsic. I don't have to depend on anything external outside of me. It has to be intrinsic. It has to be natural. It has to be from within me. It cannot be lost. It cannot be diminished. It cannot diminish. It cannot change. I want such a source of happiness. So it gradually observing the negative aspects of worldly endeavors, we have to divert our attention slowly to that self within, which is the only source of all ananda, all bliss.
Anandam Brahmete Vyajanat. The young student Bhrigu, Rishi Varuna's son, he approaches his teacher to know Adihe Bhagavo Brahmeti. Oh sir, father, please teach me about Brahman. They say Brahman is the ultimate reality and we are that essentially. So Father Varuna was a very skillful teacher. Gradually he takes him step by step, as Sanat Kumara did for Narada and Svetiketu did for Uddhalaka, from lower truth to higher truth. Knowledge in increments, persistent inquiry. Persistence must be there. You know a little bit and then we think, oh, I know everything. Then that is not good. We have to persist. What is there more that I don't know, that I have to know? Where can I find eternal, unchanging, infinite, unconditional happiness that never leaves me? Or I cannot be separated from it. Such a source of happiness I want. I am not satisfied with the few temporary offerings of this world. They come and then they go. They are fleeting. Notoriously undependable. That kind of studied indifference will come. Nirveda. Studied indifference towards the offerings of the world. And at the same time, it's not just a negative thing. At the same time, our attention is drawn to the only source of all joy, infinite joy, which is our self within, which is intrinsic. We are that. We don't have that. If it is something that we have, then there will be separation inevitably. I have this, you know, as an object from me, brings a lot of happiness. It can be $1 billion. But one day or other, I and that will be separated. Then I'll become disillusioned. Dukkha yoni, I'll become unhappy. I become dependent on it. I don't want that. I want something which is my true self, which cannot be lost. Even if the body goes, that self will be there. That I want. That is what dosha drishti is. Dosha drishti means frequently dwelling on the limitations of worldly happiness and at the same time trying to understand this, where can I find the source of true joy and happiness, ananda, where can it be found? How can I find it? Scripture says you don't have to find it. You are that. If it is something outside which you don't have now, if you find it as a result of effort, it will go away. Anything that is acquired which is not intrinsic is going to go away. But if you are that, how can you lose yourself? You can't lose yourself. You are always there. That I is always there. Not the body and the mind or the ego, but the self. That is only. If you contact that, if you realize that that is our true nature, that is the end of life. Self-knowledge, atma-jnana. If you are atma-jnana, we are happy. That is the teaching. Shama means all the disturbances caused by sense objects, waves of arising in the mind. See something, I want this, I cannot get it, then unhappiness. If you get it, for some time it gives happiness, then it goes away, then unhappiness. Eventually unhappiness will be the culmination. Because the adhyantam, they have a beginning and an end. That is not the way. Make the mind calm so that it can dwell uninterruptedly or with minimum interruption on the self within. Buddha is a perfect example of how frequent objective observation of the negative aspects of worldly life, worldly enjoyment, worldly glory leads us gradually to distaste, dispassion, renunciation, and then self-knowledge. That is samaham. Means tranquility of the mind without any disturbance caused by sense objects, attachment to sense objects. Attachment is the cause of all suffering. That's why Shankara also says in another place, if we pin our hopes for happiness on anything in the world outside, it may be the highest thing that one can achieve. Brahmadi, from the position of Brahma, not forget the U.S. president, first president of the United States. That's only for 4 years or 8 years if you get re-elected. Then so much trouble in between. Who wants to be in that position?
But that is not happiness. You ask that president in office. We want happiness that is unassociated with any negative feelings and negative thoughts, disadvantages, which is unconditional, which is eternal, not for 4 years or 8 years. Brahma's position is also a position like the president position. The term of office is one cycle of creation. After that cycle of creation is over, sir, please retire, go back to Brahmaloka, and then eventually to Mukti, another person will occupy the chair. But your offices, your offices, occupied by a jiva. So Shankara says, even if you have desire for the highest office, higher than any office in the whole universe, even that is going to end one day, and anything that ends one day is going to cause disillusionment, unhappiness when it goes away from you. Separation is inevitable. So Shankara says, true dispassion, peace of mind, comes from non-dependence on anything that is not intrinsic, outside, external, which is temporary, comes and goes, and separation is inevitable from that. We don't want that. Brahmadi stambha paryante anitya bhoga vastini. These are all anitya. They are there today, tomorrow they will go. Nachiketa says, swabhava mrtya svedanta kaitan. Swabhava means, they are there today, everything is there, family is there, children are there, position is there, power is there, money is there, health is there, beauty is there, everything is there, property is there. But sooner or later, one by one or all together, they will leave, or they are there, I have to leave. One way or another, separation will come, then disillusionment will come, then unhappiness will come. We don't want that. All search for happiness, worldly happiness, result in unhappiness and disillusionment. So that is not the way. You have to look for the happiness where it can be found. For that you have to prepare the mind, make the mind calm, not prone to disturbances from worldly sense objects. Oh, he said this, he did this, I got this, but not enough. Something more I want. That's not the way to find happiness. Shama means frequently examining the disadvantages of worldly pleasures, endeavors, and dwelling on the positive aspects at the same time. You don't want all your thoughts to be negative. We have to look at the same time. Yes, there is a way out. There is a way out. There is a way Vedanta offers of finding true, unconditional, infinite, eternal joy. Fountain of joy is within us, nothing outside. That is why if you examine the life of any great saint, they did not try to find happiness through worldly acquisitions of wealth, power, position. They rejected all these things. They knew right away that this is not the way. They went straight to the goal of self-knowledge, or pure devotion, as in the case of Shabari, Sri Ramakrishna, and that is the source of joy. Shama means, by frequently examining the limitations and negative aspects of worldly pleasures, and seeking the kingdom of God only, exclusively. If we seek that, all this will be added unto us. That is first discipline. Calmness of mind, acquired by frequent dwelling on the negative aspects of worldly pleasures and accomplishments. Second discipline is dhamma. This is easier to understand. Dhamma means controlling sense organs, 5 sense organs of perception, 5 of action. They always have the tendency, as we saw before, to go out and seek contact with sense objects. That tendency has to be curbed. Something good has to be given. We cannot altogether take away sense objects. It won't work. We replace sense objects with better ones. So in stages we can cultivate dhamma. Vishayabhyah paravartya sthapanam swasya golake. The hand always wants to touch something, ear wants to hear something, tongue wants to taste something, nose wants to smell something. You have to control these tendencies. Focus all their energy on the self within. This is what we do in meditation. When you want to meditate, you turn off your cell phone, your land phone you put on the answering machine, and you close the doors of your puja room, and then you sit down in one fixed place, fixed posture, without moving hands and feet,
without looking in all directions. This is Chanamalokayan, Sri Krishna says. Not looking in who has come, who is going, who is wearing what. No. Close your eyes. Focus on this, on the chosen ideal inside. That is how we curb the tendency of the sense organs, sense organs, from their tendency to go out and then make their energy, attention, focused on the self within. That's meditation. We know that. We do it. Most of you do it every day. That's what we do. We curb the tendency of the mind and sense organs, especially sense organs, sense organs, close them and make them dwell inside. Keep them, hand must be kept quiet like this on the lap. Feet must be folded if you are sitting on the floor or on the chair. And ears, we should not want to hear any music or something or phone conversation, everything is turned off. Like this. That is dhamma, controlling sense organs. Ubhayesham indriyanam sadhamah parikirtatra. Both kinds of sense organs. Ubhayesham indriyanam. Two kinds of sense organs. 5 of perception, 5 of action. All have to be curbed, controlled, and kept under control. At least for some time during meditation time. But merely controlling sense organs, but the mind is wandering in the whole world in 10 different directions. That is not good. Sri Krishna says that is hypocrisy. People will say, oh, he is absorbed in deep meditation. But what is happening in my mind? Thinking about what they will serve for lunch or what happened 10 years ago or in India. If mind is roaming in an uncontrolled way all over the world in 10 directions and apparently my sense organs are still, that is not meditation. That is not dhamma. Karmendriyani samyamya vyaste manasasmaran. Controlling sense organs, karmendriyas, that is easy to do. Keep the hands still, feet still, etc. Close the eyes, etc. That we can do. But the more important thing, difficult thing, is to make sure that the mind is not wandering in all the unwanted direction. Focused on this, on the object of meditation, on the Ishtadevata, chosen ideal. Indriyarthan manasasmaran. Vimudhatma, a person who does this kind of insincere practice, appearing to be very still in meditation, absorbed in meditation, but allowing the mind to roam in among sense objects, saha mityachara uchyate. That's not truthfulness. So dhamma means controlling sense organs, at the same time making the mind focused on the object of meditation. The third discipline is Uparati. This is similar to the first two disciplines. Uparati means, Shankara defines, non-dependence on sense objects for anything. The less we depend on sense objects, the better it is for us. That's why great saints, they had very few sense objects. Few possessions. What did they have? A couple of pieces of cloth, wearing cloth, a water pot, and some small room to stay. See, in Allahabad Ashrama, Ramakrishna Mat, the room is there where Swami Vijnanananji used to stay. Very simple. If you go and see, there is nothing in it. Very simple room. If the room is cluttered with all kinds of things, they all exert influence on our mind. The things around us, in our presence, they exert a subtle influence on the mind. Though I don't touch it or see it, but its very presence exerts an influence on my mind. Supposing you sleep in a very nice, calm ashrama bedroom. Then no TV, nothing is there. You'll find your nights peacefully. But if you're invited to the White House to spend a night in the Lincoln room, then I have never had the experience, so I don't know, but I don't think it'll be very peaceful. Things around us, we have to simplify the environment. Uparati means Bahya analambanam vritte eshoparati ruttama. Analambanam means non-dependence. We depend on sense organs for sense objects for everything. If I don't have enough sense objects, if I don't have enough food to eat, I become unhappy. If I don't have nice clothes to wear, I become unhappy. If I don't have enough money, I become unhappy because I'm attached to them. I'm attached to people in my life. If they're not there, if I don't see them often enough, then I don't become
peaceful, I become restless. You become dependent on sense objects as sources of happiness. That dependence has to be reduced gradually. Sense objects are notoriously undependable sources of, as sources of happiness. The necessities there, we need to have sense objects. The body itself is a sense object. How can we function without it? But we should not become dependent on it as a source of happiness. They are not. They are functional. For functioning purposes, we need sense. We need a place to stay, roof over our heads. We need some food to eat. We need clothes to wear. We need money to spend. All those things are necessities. Necessities. They have a certain place in our life, function in our life. Swamiji says money is not bad, in good hands. Make God and make money as much as you like, Swamiji says. But how you make the money, how you spend it is what is important. Make the money in dharmic way. More money you have, the more you can help other people. If you are very poor, how can you help others? You need yourself help from other people. So Swamiji says Swamiji does not say you should be poor. He said, go ahead and make money. He goes to the extent of saying in the Karma Yuga lecture that a householder who does not make enough money through dharmic means is being immoral, failing in your duty. Artha is a legitimate purushartha approved. If you have money, then we can help other people do something good. If I am myself dependent on others, then how can I do anything good? So money is not bad, in good hands. But greed is bad. Attachment is bad. Not a source of happiness. Necessity, but not a source of happiness. So we should have it. We should be objective about it. It's not permanent. I use it for good purpose and make it in the dharmic way. So that kind of relationship with sense objects is good. But dependence on it, alambanam, means dependence on it, for happiness is going to result in unhappiness. That is the discipline of not being dependent on sense objects as sources of happiness is uparti. Bahya analambaram buddhi vrittehe esha uparti ruttama. Then samadama uparti titiksha. This has come many times. Titiksha means forbearance. The ability to bear all vicissitudes of life which are inevitable, calmly without complaining, without lamenting. That has come so many times. Sahanam sarva dukkhanam. Ability to bear all difficulties. Difficulties usually, invariably come. If not now, it's later. That is inescapable, unavoidable. Difficulties, adversities are unavoidable in human life. They will come. But when they come, we have to do three things. Before they come, we have to take preventive measures. If I do this one, this will happen. I don't want that to happen, so I will not do that one. So we have to take preventive measures as much as possible, but you can't prevent everything entirely. Still, in spite of our best preventive effort, difficulties will come. Unforeseen difficulties will come. From three different sources, difficulties will come. Adversity created by oneself, adhyatmika tapa. Adversity seeming to come from outside sources, other people, animals and plants. Adversity suffering coming from natural calamities such as hurricanes, volcanic eruption and famine and flood, etc. You can't prevent them entirely. We try to prevent them as much as possible, take precautions, but still they will come. Then we have to take remedial measures. There are two schools here at this point. There's one school of very strict orthodox monastic life. They don't take any remedial measure. If they come, if the problem comes, let the problem come. If the body becomes sick, body becomes sick. I'm not going to worry about it. They refuse medication. But we don't generally recommend it. We have to take remedial measure. Because if the body is creating trouble, then not only can I not do any work, I'll be a source of problem for other people too, in the family or in the ashrama or in the organization. So we have to take precautions. We have to take remedial measures as much as possible. If after taking all remedial measures at our disposal, problem still remains, or some aspect of it remains, or a new problem comes, then we have to bear it calmly. Chintavila aparahitam. Without brooding,
And without anxiety, without stress, and without lamenting. Vilapa means lamenting. All right. Difficulty has come, we do everything possible. And if it remains, I will accept it, bear it calmly. Because as Swamiji said, no suffering comes to human beings except as we have paved the way for it ourselves. There's always a cause. It is hidden. We may not know it. Why this is happening to me now? Why me now? We ask. But in the remote past or even in the recent past, we have done something to make pave the way to court this. Nothing will come without any antecedent, without any cause. Therefore, I will try my best to prevent it, remedy it, and whatever remains, I will face it calmly, without brooding, without lamenting. If brooding will only make it worse, it's not going to improve it. It'll curb our creative ability to face the problem properly if you keep on brooding too much about it. Yes, this has happened, so what can I do now? What can I do now? That should be our question. Not why it happened. It happened. Maybe it's Buddha who said that if an arrow is somehow stuck in your chest, you're walking in a forest and somebody, not Dick Cheney, the arrow intended, an arrow meant for an animal comes and strikes you. But then what's the use of discoursing on that one? Who sent the arrow? Was it meant for me? Was it meant for a deer? And what is it made of? And what angle it was shot? Well, there's no use. Try to remove it quickly and get relief. That is remedial measure. Without lamentation, without chinta vilaparahitam, saati tiksha nigadyate, that is the next discipline. Two more are remaining. Shraddha. Shraddha means a studied, cultivated conviction about the truth depicted in the scriptures, Upanishads, and taught by teachers. We have to have a certain starting conviction, faith. We can doubt, we can question, but we have to put the instructions into practice, then only we know that it is true. We have to verify it ourselves. Without verifying, I cannot dismiss, oh, this is all not true. Somebody said a long time ago. How can you dismiss that without giving it a chance? Without trying to, even if you want to disprove it, you have to practice it. I give an example on how Shraddha works. Supposing I am driving long distance and I get lost. I take an exit for some rest and then I don't know how to come back. Then I am roaming here and there. I want to go to 95 North. I am going to New York. On the way I took some exit for gas or something, then I cannot come back to 95 North. Then I roam here and there, see in gas station, the gas station attendant, hey, how to get back to 95 North? He says, he gives a direction. Sir, go in this way for 1 mile, you see a traffic light, make a left on the traffic light, and then go 2 more miles, you'll see a Shell gas station, and there is another traffic light. Then you make a right, you see some junction 95 signs. Now, I have two options. He has given me, I asked him for directions on how to go to 95 North. He gave the directions. Now, one of two things I can do. I can doubt his instruction. How do I know that he's not misguiding me, telling me the truth? How do I know that these directions are correct? I can doubt. I can stand there. He can stand in the gas station and stand doubting his instructions, directions. Or the second option is to let me see. He said, make a left turn. 1 mile traffic light comes, your conviction that this right direction increases a little bit as you make progress. Then you make a left turn, as he said. Then you go a couple more miles. You see a Shell station. Oh, then what he said here, up to here, this is true. Then you make a right turn, as he said. And then go 2 miles with junction 95. Retrospectively, you are convinced that these directions were correct. If you don't do that one, if you doubt his words and stay there in the parking lot,
10 o'clock he closes the gas station, goes home, he'll be still standing there in the parking lot at the gas station. Or you can ask him, are you sure you are giving me the right directions? He says, sir, I have gone there myself many times. Many people have given directions. They all reached 95 north. You can also reach. If you press him, how do you know what you are saying is true? He will be becoming, he has to serve other customers. I'm not the only one. So I have told you, if you like, you go. That's all I know. This is the way to get to 95 north. That's all he can do. He says, I have gone there myself following this path. I have reached 95 north. You too can reach 95 north if you follow the direction. That's all he can do. Teachers and scriptures are doing just that. We have walked along this path. You have reached the goal of self-knowledge or pure devotion. These are the steps we followed. You follow this, we'll also reach the goal. That's all they can do. They cannot literally come and make us do everything, get up at 5 o'clock and go to shrine. They'll get up at 5 o'clock and go to shrine. Then if I doubt why I should do this, how do I know that the teachings are true in the gospel or in the Gita or in the Upanishad? I can doubt all my life and I will remain stagnant and old age will come and one day I will die. Instead, with a little starting faith, let me check. All those saints over separated by centuries and continents are saying the same thing in different ways. There must be something true in it. Let me try it out. If it doesn't work, then I have the right to say it was not right. But without trying, I have no right to dismiss it as not being true or correct. That initial faith is needed. It's that faith that drives our life. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says, Shraddha mayo yam purusha yoya shraddha saiva. It is our deep internal conviction that this is right for me, this is good for me, that should drive our lives. That studied conviction developed by repeated hearing, reflection, and logical reasoning, that will guide us in our spiritual life, and that kind of faith is necessary. Sri Krishna says, those who do not have faith in the dharma as taught by him go round and round in the path of transmigration without reaching me. Apraapyamam nivartante vritti samsara vartmani. One more discipline is remaining, samadhana. Samadhana means focusing on the goal of life. We'll do that next time. And then after that, one last instruction is remaining. Inquiry into the nature of the Lord's teaching. Mama tattva vichara. We'll do that. Try to finish it next time, and then maybe one more session to conclude. Then we will conclude this series. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om, may all be happy, may all be free from afflictions. May all realize what is auspicious. May no one be subject to misery. Om, peace. Peace be within us all. Peace and harmony amongst all beings. And peace be everywhere in nature. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Sarvam Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.